SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. We'll call it the top of the hour, and happy to connect with Dave Grenig. Had some trouble earlier, but it's all right. We flip-flopped, put Jay Pribman in front of Dave, and I don't think Dave minds. Dave, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Steve?
We're good, and good to connect. And we got a lot to cover. Somehow we didn't get you on for Breeders' Cup, and so do you want to go all the way back to that?
I don't remember the Breeders' Cup. I'm old.
I had to start with that because we haven't talked yet. There really is a bunch of things to cover in addition to obviously this big card tomorrow, and we'll get to that in a second. Plenty of hard news though between what potentially is happening at Saratoga, and then of course the news yesterday that Matt Hegarty wrote up for the paper that there'll be 500 hours of coverage on Fox. Basically, almost every Belmont and Saratoga card will be on Fox Sports.
Yeah, part of those cards anyway, and it's an expansion of what has been already out there, but it's just taken it to another level over a 5-year deal, which is nice to see a 5-year commitment from Fox. It took me aback a little bit by surprise that any station would really want to cover that much horse racing, but it's good to see in an era, I guess, where gaming is becoming more, available to everybody, that, I guess Fox has taken a shot with horse racing to see if, see how that works. It gives them some live content. And, I don't know how the public anymore is feeling about the talking heads, basically radio shows on TV or sports guys just sort of bantering back and forth. I don't know. I don't know if people like it or if they're tired of it. You listen to some of these guys like a Skip Bayless pontificate, and they take no responsibility when they're wrong, and they're always right even when they're wrong. And maybe after a while people are tired of that stuff, so it's time to put something, it's time to put Andy Serling on TV.
Absolutely. And nobody will get tired of that. I mean, that's appointment television. Him and Amos. There's a lot of fun. No, I think you hit it on the head. It's content. There's continuity, and it really serves a positive service for the industry. I mean, we go back to McKinsey and that study that, in fact, the Jockey Club initiated, those 2 years of the Jockey Club tour on Fox. And so really racing has had I think Mike Mulvihill deserves a time in the spotlight, because it's Mulvihill that's really pioneering this and pushing it.
Yes, I will agree with that. And it's good that he has he's a fan of horse racing, and I believe a fan of Naira. And let's give, and Naira does a nice job on those shows. It's not just, Andy and Paula Duca and Amos arguing back and forth. It's, there's some, they produce some good educational pieces that, show some of the behind the scenes stuff and explanation, explain parts of the game. So Naira does a nice job in producing those shows, and it's nice that they found a willing partner like Fox, behest by Mike Mulvihill to get these races on TV.
No doubt, and it's a positive for the handle as well. There's just nothing but nice things that come of this. And Dave, also, of course, the news circulating up here that Naira that much closer to going to a 5-day race week at Saratoga, which, frankly,
let's rein some of that stuff in. Let's start with the basis of that tweet.
Yes.
There was no board meeting yesterday, so there was no board meeting. This isn't new in the sense that, if you read Tim Wilkins or my Saratoga wrap-up piece back in September, is that Naira, Chris K. Ditch, they've talked about for a long time the desire to go to a 5-day race week. So if you think this is the first year that they've ever spoke about, maybe we should go to 5 days a week, It's not. It's the first time that whoever that television reporter decided to say, oh, they're going to talk about it. They talk about it every year. And I've seen a hard copy of what's been presented to the Gaming Commission, and it's the same schedule, with the caveat being, after our board meeting, we reserve the right to come back to you to amend it. So as of now, I would say that it's going to be the same schedule. Could it change? Yes, it could. Does the construction of the arena slash, you know, renovations to Belmont Park have a role in this? Absolutely. Has NYRA received one approval of anything to do one iota of change to Belmont Park? No. You've been around. Does that happen overnight? No. So, you know, could it happen? It's sort of like I've been covering New York racing since 1994. Every year since 1994, I've heard a story of Aqueduct is going to close. Aqueduct will eventually close one day. I don't know if it'll be 2094 or 2024. Eventually, that rumor will be right. Eventually, Saratoga will go to a five-day week. So eventually, the rumor that we hear every year will be right. Could it be next year? Maybe. But nothing is set in stone.
All right, we'll keep an eye, and we'll wait for the board meeting and see if there is that. I mean, personally, to me, it seems like a natural, and I would applaud it enthusiastically.
Yes and no. Yes and no. You can take a good thing and get more of it, and then it wears out. And more so than this, because it's just a 1 week with, you know, an expansion of time, the same number of days, the same number of races will be run if this happens, which, by the way, is not a good thing from the standpoint of you're a guy who ships in from Kentucky, so to say, who now has to pay more rent because the people who own their houses up there, who may or may not want to rent it for that long, are going to charge you more money. But you aren't getting, if you're a Kentucky-based horseman, you aren't getting any more money to, you don't have the opportunity to make any more money because it's the same number of races. So your expenses are already going to go up double-digit percent. That's eating out, that's paying for help, that's, you know, there's a lot of things going on here that make this, while it seems a natural for you and the horse player and whatnot, it's not so natural for the shipping guys. It's just an added expense on top of what's already, and as you well know, as a horse owner yourself, a cumbersome expense of doing business in New York. It may not be such a great thing.
Well, I in the meantime, as you say, we're not penciled in yet, but we'll keep an eye and we'll see. I mean, at some point, as we all recognize, part and parcel with things like the double wide turf course at Aqueduct, with an idea that, you know, there's going to come a point where we'll have to be at Aqueduct for more of the year while Belmont gets renovated, whenever that gets started. I mean, there's those kinds of things. And on that topic, it looks like we're going to be okay here to finish the turf season the next couple of days.
You have two on today. The fifth race is off. The third and eighth are on. You might get tomorrow. I don't understand why you would card Ford races for December 1st on the grass, but you might get two or three on tomorrow, and that should be it because it's going to rain tomorrow night and Sunday's races. You know, I didn't quite understand why they put out a final yesterday with one turf race and then revised it with a second turf race for an eight race card. There was zero chance of them being on the turf on Sunday. And to me, once Sunday comes, it's going to be it. So the turf season has been a disaster here in New York since July. And it's going to end here with, like, if we get these races on, I think there'll be 30 to 32 turf races run at Aqueduct this fall. There were 87 last year.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Wow. Yeah, Andy gave us a number like 2 weeks ago. He had a number going back to the summer that was just astounding. And, you know, you would think that the handle would be, you know, impacted terribly by it, but it somehow they've managed to actually hold their own despite all the races that have come off.
Right.
Well, let's dive into this terrific card and start with the feature and the Cigar Mile. Dave, I sat down last night and I literally had trouble eliminating many. It's a fun addition, and the fact that Mendelsohn comes back yet again, you wrote about this the other day, that only enhances this field.
Yeah, you know, I told T.J. Comerford, I said, look, after this race, if you come back for the Queens County, you'll be eligible for 5% more money because you'll be part of the Silver and Star Loyalty Program. I mean, I don't know that there's a horse based in New York who's running more important races throughout the year in New York than Mendelsohn, and he's thousands of miles away. So kudos to Coolmore and Aiden O'Brien for shipping this horse for yet another graded stakes. Look, I always thought this horse was a tad overrated. I thought he's run some really nice races. You know, the Travers was a solid race. The Jockey Club Gold Cup was a good race. Breeders' Cup, I don't know. He got beat, you know, he ran to the quarter pole, and that was about it. He doesn't seem any worse for wear for the traveling. So, you know, this whole thing about, you know, it used to, remember, Steve, when guy used to ship his horse for the Dubai World Cup and come back and, oh, God, I got to give him 6 months off. Well, Aiden right. O'Brien don't have to give him 6 months off. Aiden O'Brien says, let's go right back to the well. Now, I do think he was probably in need of a race in the Dwyer. I don't think the Dwyer was a true billing. I don't think the Dwyer was a true billing of him or Friendspire. I think Friendspire is a nice horse. I don't think Friendspire is going to sit there and run 107 buyer speed figures every race. He caught a horse on a day that horse absolutely freaked in Friendspire. His speed, they like to get him into the race. And really, the key to Mendelsohn will be how much and how fast he'll have to, you know, how fast he'll have to go. Who'll make him go fast? Is it Stand the Man? Is it Coppertown? Is it Pattern Recognition? You know, who's going to do the dirty work? If nobody does the dirty work, he might be hard to catch. So that's the sort of interesting part for me, is who's going to put the pressure and when on Mendelsohn. And, you know, I'm sure that Todd Pletcher and Chad Brown are hoping that it's John Terranova with Stand the Man, but I don't necessarily know that that's going to happen. I don't know.
Talk a little bit about the conversation with Todd Pletcher, and here's the familiar ownership team of Windstar and China Horse and SF and Sol Cumin, the head of Plains. Coppertown, obviously, you know, had the issue that kept him sidelined for a year, but that performance at Keeneland, certainly had some people raise an eyebrow, and he runs back to, you know, these last two performances that we've seen over the course of a year and a month, and he's a serious player.
I think he's a very serious player in the race. I think what you liked about the last race is that he showed that he could sit from off the pace and be a bit wide and still run that way. Now, granted, Control Stake and Heavy Roller aren't Mendelsohn and True or Pattern Recognition or even Pat on the Back or Sunny Ridge. I think, you know, it was a light field. But what you did like, you know, just his ability to finish, you know, to stalk and come from off the pace and run away from them. And, you know, it was a 6.5 furlong race. He probably ran closer to 7, given how, you know, wide he was. If you go back to when he was in, you know, when he got those two races back to back in 2017, when he came off a 6.5 month layoff as opposed to year layoff, his second start was even better than his first. And the one thing that you can at least, that he gets credit for when you look at his running lines, so that first level, that maiden win in September 17, he beat Backyard Heaven, who turned out to be a nice horse, at least good enough to win. Was it the Ali Sheba stakes on Derby Day and go off the favorite in the Stephen Foster? Then he comes back in the allowance race and beats Pattern Recognition, who has since then has come back to win 3 of his 5 starts, including the Kelso. So at least in the limited schedule that he's had, and the types of races that he's running, he's faced some real horses. So that's a big plus for him. You just wonder, is one race in 420 days enough to win a Grade One? I'm going to put my money on it and say yes. It's sort of my faith in Todd Pletcher and my reading between the lines in that there will be representatives of Farm and China Horse Club in attendance tomorrow, and they're not coming to New York in December to see the Christmas tree.
Although that is something they shouldn't miss.
They must. You know, the race is at 3:40. You know, the race is at 3:45. If they win and get their picture taken, they're, you know, aside from Don Pepp's, there's not a whole lot of areas to celebrate. They might go into the city and go, you know, if they win, and go see the Christmas tree and then have a nice dinner.
Well, and of course, the racing tie-in to the Christmas tree trip. Guy Torsiglieri from Steeplechase. Guy's company picks out the tree and cuts it and transports it. And
is
brings
it one
to,
of the trees that they jump over for practice, you know, for timber?
Yes, and then long term it becomes part of a timber course. Yes.
taking a deeper dive into the race, I do want to give a puncher's chance to Jeremiah Englehart's horse, Pat on the Back, who I think is listed at 15-1 on the line.
Yep.
And I think this horse has a legitimate chance, if not to win it, to at least spice up the number if one of the three favorites were to win. This horse's last four races, let's be more specific, his last three in a one-turn setting was a nose loss to Diversify. What would he be in here, price-wise, if he was still running? A nice race in the Saginaw. And then I thought a very good race in the Empire Classic, and I think this, but again, a lot depends on how fast they go early and who's putting the pressure on Mendelsohn. I think Pat on the Back could work out a decent trip here. And the one thing that Jeremiah has said about him that I do think reigns true is he runs to the level of his competition. This will be the toughest field he's probably faced, depth-wise, but if he does that again, rises to the level of his competition, he could be dangerous at a price.
Well, and the other horse along those same lines for me is Sonny Ridge, I'm not going to hold the Woodward against him. This is a scenario where he has proven himself before, and he should get a very advantageous behind the speed trip. Like the fact that Rad is back with him. They won the state dinner together. I respect Sonny Ridge tremendously. He really has had a terrific career. It is a dynamite edition of the Cigar Mile. Obviously, I'm telling you, if you're pushing Pat on the Back, I mean, he's the second longest shot on the board, and you're right. I mean, he is absolutely, virtually the entire field is separated by a couple of lengths for those that that work on figures. There's very little separating this field, and it's all going to come down to paces, the pace, which seems like it should be at the very least honest and more likely fast. Let's talk about the 2-year-old.
The two horses, I kind of would be surprised if they really should withstand the man in True Timber.
That's fair.
Really, he's in deep here. And True Timber, while he's run a few nice races, sprinting in the Lowndes Company, and he did beat Pattern Recognition, I get it. But I don't know that he's, it's a shame that No Dozing missed this race, because I really thought No Dozing would have had a big chance. But, he was second in No Dozing, but he was second in Country Mile.
The one thing you can say for True Timber, particularly looking back at the spring, second off the layoff, he made a very big dynamic jump when he stretched out from 6 to 7 back in from May to June, those two performances at Belmont, and his best race from a figure standpoint, that 103 buyer, the 7 furlong win, second level allowance. And it there's a little bit of that same kind of look. He's not impossible, Dave. That's what's amazing about this race. I'm telling you, I was trying to cross names off. What I can't really come up with for him is the trip that's going to win it. That's the part of it that I mean, in terms of having a race in his handbag that can be pulled out, he's got one. So this should be really good, and it's a great feature on a dynamite card. The stakes start with the Demoiselle, and as it happens, for those that are looking at today's action, Dave, there's kind of a fun connection that I pointed out in my write-up. In the seventh race today, Face It comes back for Kieran. And Face It is the 2-1 favorite in there. And this Tappet filly, second off the layoff and off the maiden win, she, of course, is basically the aunt of Enliven. She's a sister of It's Tricky. And Enliven draws the rail coming out of the Tempted and start the discussion, I think, with Godolphin's Ghost Zapper filly in the Demoiselle.
Yeah, look, I think when you get to this Remsen and the Demoiselle, the key is who can get the distance. It's a 2-turn-mile-and-eighth race. None of these have really done that yet, although I would say that, Jennifer's Dream, I'm sorry, Positive Spirit running a mile and 16th at Keeneland is probably maybe the closest one to have seen this type of race. Enliven, I thought she was getting a nice trip in the Tempted and looked like she, because I thought the 1-turn-mile was going to suit her perfectly, and looked like she was, on her way to having a major impact in the race. And then Oxy Lady just blew right by her and beat her by 5. Now, the good thing is Enliven was 7 lengths clear of the rest of the field. Kieran is pretty confident that she will handle the stretch out, and the inside post shouldn't hurt her at all. It's funny that the inside post was drawn by several key players on the card, including Mendelssohn, Marley's Freedom, who I'm sure we'll get to in a minute, and Enliven. So I would imagine that the rail might be the place to be tomorrow.
Good point.
I think Enliven, she's a deserving favorite. Her numbers have gotten better. She doesn't face anyone who might be as talented, at least looks on paper, as talented as Oxy Lady looks like she could possibly be. So I think she's a strong favorite. If there was another one in here there's two in here that I kind of will throw in on a ticket, depending on what the wager is Positive Spirit. Is, as I said, she did go the mile and 16th at Keeneland, excuse me, and ran pretty well. Talking to Rudy Brissett, the former modest exercise rider / assistant, he thought that the light bulb went on for her when coming out of that race and just her training, and then she won a 1-turn-mile maiden race. She is a 3/4 sister to Always Dreaming, so the pedigrees suggest that she, will relish just as a ground. He's pretty high on her. That will work in her favor. And also, I thought Philly Joel for Rudy Rodriguez also improved on the stretch out. And the one thing that I'm interested to see if it works out, the one ideology I have is I think you really need to be fit to run an aqueduct right now. I think that track is a bit on the deeper side, and evidence to that is, she's got a couple of bullet works at aqueduct that are in the 102 range, and also you could tell the times of the race is also yep. seemed to indicate that the track is slow. I think that might work in Philly Joel's favor, that she's training at aqueduct, she's worked there, she hasn't run there yet in the afternoon, none of them have, Enliven has, and Girl of Toscanova, but I think that her training there every day and the fact that she did improve greatly on the stretch out will give her a plus. Is she good enough to beat Enliven? I don't know, but I'll look at the price to see if I want to take a chance to find out.
Molto Bella, I certainly am very, very interested in here. I was there for, as we all were, for the Rags to Riches performance behind Mother Mother, and Ian Wilkes comes into town, and he's come into town on big days over the years and won big races, including the Carter, when we think back to Warrior's Reward. It's the Demoiselle. We turn to the Gopher Wand, and another invader that does well in New York, Dave, Bob Baffert. Marley's Freedom coming out of the Philly and Mare Sprint, and maybe in this spot trying to enhance her case to be the Philly and Mare Sprint champion.
That's what he mentioned to me as part of the reason to come here, but I don't know. The 1-turn-mile to me doesn't necessarily scream sprint, and Shamrock Rose still did beat her on the square. I understand that. And it's also a grade 3. The Gopher Wand sort of lost its way in the graded status. I'm not sure that a grade 3, even if you add it to the Ballerina and the races that she's previously won, Desert Stormer and the race at Los Al, vaults you over Shamrock Rose in the biggest race of the year. So it possibly could, but I don't know. But she's certainly, obviously, the horse to beat here, provided the rail. And, you know, she was a little too far back, I thought, in addition to being wide in the Breeders' Cup. She was a bit further back than I thought they had probably planned on. And she was trying to run. She just wasn't running fast enough as the other horses, you know, like a Shamrock Rose. So Bob said that when he got her back to California, she's training as well as she was going into the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, he did want to stretch her out, or at least looking toward next year, wants to stretch her out. This looks like the ideal spot to try it. And if it, you know, if she were to win and win big, maybe she gets a few, maybe people look at it, but it's going to be hard, I think, to usurp Shamrock Rose beating her on the square. Other horse of note here to me would be Pacific Wind on the outside, just cutting back in distance. Her last win came in the one-turn mile setting, that being the Grade 2 Ruffian at Belmont Park. She looks like she could work out a nice trip from the outside draw. Her stablemate, Your Love, I'm a little suspect if she wants to go the mile, but again, it's this looks like the spot to give it a shot.
Goes as the sixth, and then we've got a couple of turf races that lead up to the Remsen, or one turf race, the seventh. The fifth is comes ahead of it, and we talked with Jay earlier, Dave, and pretty much focused on Maximus Mischief for Butchie Reed and company, and this colt, based on those two performances, obviously the horse to beat. But it's going to be interesting to see what Castellano does off the break, and how much harassment he offers to Frankie Pennington and Maximus Mischief.
I would think that they just stalk and don't necessarily, you know, go after her early, because I still think that, you know, the question Maximus Mischief has to answer is how far does she really want to go? And, you know, the other thing too is I know people raving about her, and I'm not knocking her, but if people sort of ignore the fact that in her three horse race she was trying to get out for about the first 16th of a mile, and no one really knows exactly what was going on there. Well, what if she tries to get out going into the first or the second turn on Saturday? So I'm a little, you know, this coronation, or not him, it's this coronation, I'm a little leery to start coronating Maximus Mischief. He's been very impressive visually, finishing his races under wraps and went running decent times and getting fast numbers. I don't even know the times are that fast. He's getting fast numbers, I guess, on a track that's not yielding fast times. Don't know anything about the horses he's beaten, except I think one of them came back. I think the horse he beat second time in his debut, they wound up claiming this. I think this group claimed the horse because obviously they knew that what they had, so they claimed the horse. I'm glad he's getting a little bit of a test. This race did not come up strong at all, with the Code of Honor coming out, Vekoma deciding not to come. Network Effect missed some time because of the temperature. He was supposed to run the Breeders' Futurity, and then he ran an okay race in the Nashua, but there's no depth here. So I'm not sure how. I guess we'll learn if Maximus Mischief can go this far. But this race just did not come up all that strong for me. I mean, Jamie Mejia put two horses on a van Tuesday when he got word that Code of Honor wasn't coming. I don't know if he was training these horses for this race. In fact, I could almost guarantee that he wasn't. I mean, Gladiator King just ran on a 5-furlong turf race on November 23rd. I don't necessarily think he had the Remsen in mind. And Shinomato, you know, he's run 12 times. You know, he's like a throwback. That horse is kind of straight out of 1945.
Now, the horse that that probably is worth, I know some people have murmured about Jungle Warrior, the Adina Stronach homebred by Animal Kingdom. Bourbon War intrigues because of the breeding to me is a Tappet colt out of My Conquistadori, the really nice Mark Cassie stake winner. She won the Alcibiades, thinking back a few years. I thought that Bourbon War had a bit of a look in here as a horse. I understood why Hennig was thinking turf to begin with this one, but you know, the performance, the maiden win was so good that worth trying in this spot. And I mean, from a pedigree standpoint, he certainly, you know, certainly is, should be adept at stretching out.
Yeah, I think it's illogical with the way the race kind of lost some of the major players who you thought might show. I think it's a logical step. I think the timing is a little bit off for what Mark would prefer to do. You know, his horse just ran November 14th. It was a solid enough effort. I think he wanted to find out a little bit more about, you know, I think he thinks the two-turn mile and eighth configuration of the race is going to work for him. Now, whether it works this Saturday or sometime down the road, we'll see. But he didn't want to run another mile race where, I guess, if you go to Gulfstream, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer to run in a two-turn race. So I can see why he wants to give this a shot also. And I'll tell you, another horse that's getting a little bit of buzz back here, and is Tax. Danny Gargan claimed this horse off of the Claiborne folks for $50,000 off a win going a mile and a 16th. He got him up here, and the horse, you know, the other day, it was on a very busy morning of workouts. This horse fired the fastest of 134 half-mile breezes, and I think that breeze, coupled with Code of Honor's defection, coupled with the fact he thinks this horse wants to go this far, has Danny, you know, kind of excited to run this horse. And, you know, Danny doesn't like to run his horses that don't have zero chance. I don't think he would, you know, he wasn't really forced. He supplemented his horse to run, so it wasn't like they were, you know, begging him to run, or he needed to run. I think he saw an opportunity here to find out a little bit more about how, you know, good a claim he might have. And the one thing you give him credit for is he's already proven around two turns and at a mile and a 16th, and it wasn't a bad race. So he's a little interesting to me just because, you know, Danny likes to run when he's 5-2 or less. Now, he won't be 5 or 2 to less in here, but, you know, I think he thinks he's more pros to running than cons.
Interesting, and I'm glad you expanded on that. He's 15-1 going in. Tax the seven, you know, from the seven hole, and obviously Manny Franco will have an opportunity to, you know, kind of tuck in behind Maximus Mischief, and we'll see how, you know, where Castellano is going to go, if he's going to kind of prompt
from
Gladiator
inside. King. I mean, this horse looks like he's, you know.
Yeah, he's going to go.
I'm guessing, and again, I'm not talking Gladiator King about from a standpoint of winning. I'm talking about being a pace factor
right.
in here. You know, he's coming out of sprints and turf. I mean, I got to think that he's bringing two up here to help one help the other. So while I think he's got zero chance to win, one of those two could make a presence felt just from a pace factor scenario.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll see how Manny Franco plays it. Franco's been terrific at finding a way to save ground, even outposted like that. And Dave, before we break, we should also mention that second race, the 1 mile maiden group. This clearly has got some horses with long-term potential.
Let me call it up here and hang on a second. All righty. Well, Felix the Fox comes out of that King for a Day race that, the time was debated back and forth, and I guess they went through it and had no evidence to overturn the time, although I had evidence to overturn the time, but that's neither here nor there. Then he came back and ran second again, stretching out, and it looks like a horse, again, Tappet, Ghost Zapper on the bottom, should handle the stretch out to, well, it's a mile. It's actually a cutback. My bad. I thought it was a two-turn race. You know, comes out. Lion Dance had a very nice work here out of the gate on the 26th. And I'm interested to see him. He was beaten the nose by Signalman, who obviously has come back to run very well. So, yeah, I think, you know, Lion Dance is quite interesting, obviously, in here. And then Kentucky Wildcat, another horse to come out of that King for a Day race that we mentioned. I'm not sure. You got your eye on somebody else here?
No, I mean, there's so many. But I mean, there's a lot of pedigree, Kentucky Wildcat, the Tappet for Albertrani, Godolphin Homebred out of the wonderful Better Lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You bring up, you gravitated to Line Dance. People have got to remember that mare, Cat Moves. That's Ned Evans. And she won the
right.
test. Tester, the Prioress, she was a grade one sprint winner.
Yeah, I think she won the Prioress one. It was a grade one.
There you go. And by Bernardini, keep an eye. And, you know, Jimmy, what a terrific marriage Adina Spring, Stronach Stables has been with Jimmy Jerkins.
Yeah, you know, it's old school from two standpoints. I mean, it's kind of an old school owner. He's old school. I think Frank's old school when it comes to the horses. He's a little bit a different school when it comes to owning the tracks, but old school when it comes to the horses. And he found a good, you know, old school trainer in Jimmy Jerkins. And look at, you know, when you look at the stats, Jimmy's second start, 20%, off a long layoff, almost 30%. So, you know, Jimmy's a marvelous horseman, and I'm sure that there might have been a little issue here why this horse hasn't run since September 1st, why it's going to be, 3 months between starts, but it looks like to me he's made up for it with the work tabs, and especially that work out of the gate the other day was really good.
And there's a little bit of everything in here. Kumar for Paul Pompa, and for Todd, you've got Clouseau, Don Alberto, homebred, Pioneer of the Nile, second start for Mott, and there's the moon-faced Southern Phantom that was the sensation of Saratoga, coming back to the dirt. So a little bit of everything. That's a race well worth noting. Dave, it's a terrific card, and looking forward to tomorrow's action at Aqueduct and today's $30,000 Naira Betts Pick 5 carryover on a good sequence.
Yeah, no, that was a book. Dawn the Destroyer came with a race that we hadn't seen before, and I asked Kieran a little bit about it this morning, and he mentioned that they had done a little tie-back surgery on the horse, and, you know, horse obviously had a little bit of talent, but couldn't breathe. Now the horse can breathe, and proved yesterday she can run as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
I just wish I would have asked about that horse before the race. I was in a meeting with someone yesterday when that race was being run, and when I saw 10-1 Castellano and Kieran, I was like, oh my God, what did I miss here? And then I looked back in the paper and I said, you know what, this horse was every bit of 10-1 because the horse's form was not good.
Well, and that's some people get upset about, but particularly when it comes to throat surgeries, that somehow stuff like that is supposed to be, you know, either reported or publicized. I don't know. I don't know what to. I've never been able to come down on one side or the other on that discussion. I don't know.
Look, you know, it's one of those things where it's, you know, they don't always work. He told me, you know, I had three examples of horses that he did three other surgeries. One worked, two didn't, or two worked, one didn't. And, you know, it's great when you find out about I found out that horse had throat surgery, and then he runs like he did before he had throat surgery. So I don't know the numbers. There's no stats on it, on how many horses it improves or how many it doesn't, but it doesn't always work. It's not a magic elixir. For this particular horse, it seemed like it worked. Where she goes from here, I don't know, but you might find out in the next three horses you find out have throat surgery might all run like they did before they had throat surgery.
No, exactly. Baffert talks about that too. That you don't know. It can be a dice roll, and there's also a mental aspect too, because those that have been trapped and have had this issue, sometimes they just don't. They're not interested in putting out because they're. You know, their experience was entrapping and not being able to breathe. So it's one of those things that you don't, even if you knew, you weren't, there's no guarantee. Exactly.
Right.
Jay?
Exactly.
Yeah. Dave, I appreciate the extended visit and the news coverage as well, and looking forward to tomorrow.
Looking forward to tomorrow, and happy holidays to you and your listeners, and I guess we'll talk again Wood Week.
It's not true. I will come to you. I guarantee I'll be back to you before Wood Week. Maybe for the Jimmy Wingfield.
There you go.
Dave Grenig, everybody. DRF Grenig, and the big day tomorrow at Aqueduct. Let's take a break. We got to get to James Scully and Ed DeRosa and Hammer, and we got to slip in Mike Welsh down in Florida and Nick Tamaro. Lots of handicapping yet to come. Weekend preview at the races back after this.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sormon Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
To At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, the Royal We. About 20 minutes to the top of the hour, James Scully swings in from Brisnet. And James, of course, the scene shifted from Churchill to Turfway, and the fur has already been flying at Turfway. It doesn't take long. Tonight, actually, the holiday inaugural, and a nice big full field tonight in the feature. Up at Florence, and meanwhile, some thoughts about what we saw last week at Churchill.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it was a strong final weekend at Churchill Downs. I'll say this. We've seen Candy Rod had his Gunrunner Horse of the Year in 2017, and he's really come on strong here in the fall. I mean, obviously, Game Winner is going to be champion two-year-old. He's early Kentucky Derby favorite. But over this past weekend, Leo Frick stepped forward, son of Candy Rod, for Brad Cox and that Clark handicap. And I'll just say this about Leo Frick. He's 5 years old, but you can make the case that his best races are all in front of him. He only raced three times as a three-year-old, was winless, didn't break his mane till his four-year-old season, didn't make his stakes debut until last December at Fairgrounds. And he's won three of five graded stakes with a good third in that Woodward, where he was only horse close to the pace around at the finish. So, I mean, got a 102 Bristol speed rating last time, a really solid number, improvement over that Fayette. And, you know, to me, he's just got, like, a potential to really step forward and be, like, one of the top older horses next year. And the other candy ride I'll mention is Leora, a filly of Wayne Catalano's. Lost her first race sprinting, went to the turf, broke her maiden on the main track, first time two turns by about 10 lengths, and then really showed a lot of heart. Despite giving up a ton of experience to Restless Rider to beat her. In the juvenile, in the Kentucky Juvenile, Kentucky Club Juvenile, or Kentucky Jockey Club, sorry, Signal Man. I mean, just another positive step for him. I thought his Breeders' Cup Juvenile was a huge improvement upon that non-threatening second in the Breeders' Futurity. And, you know, loved how Brian Hernandez angled him off the inside. Once again, saved all the ground in that race and really finished up gamely. But I came away from that race thinking both the winner and the runner-up could be serious three-year-olds potentially next year. I mean, they're going to have to continue to run faster. But that plus Parfait coming off a front-running maiden win at Keeneland where he showed a lot of determination but, you know, really had a clean trip. I was enormously impressed by his effort. He didn't look happy in the early stages, got shuffled back, was taking all that mud in his face. And when Julian Lethroux tipped him out on the far turn, going in the far turn, he really responded with a nice turn of foot, I thought. A really good race to move forward off of. So I came away impressed by those the top two in the Kentucky Jockey Club. And you know, looking forward to seeing what both Leora and Leo Frick have to offer going forward as well.
Now, and we, of course, had given out the Leora dope with Wayne Catalano, and that to the benefit of a lot of people. Came back Wayne again yesterday down at Fairgrounds as well. Catman, when you ask him for a frank assessment, you get it. And Leora was really kind of destined to, you know, to as she matured and as, you know, she had a chance. And we talked to you, I said this to you last week. I mean, that the fact that, you know, she ran the race she did, going the mile and a 16th ahead of Saturday, was a good indicator. And the same could be said about Pliskip Parfait. I mean, I love these kinds of horses that break their maiden, and even if it looks a little murky and it looks like a slow race compared to the ones with stakes experience, you know, that's how you get, you know, 27-1 and 15-1 on Pliskip Parfait, horses that look kind of dirtied up.
Yeah, and it's a real simple idea that, like, I mean, horses that don't have much experience, only have two or three races underneath them, have an enormous room for improvement if they do keep moving forward. So it's like two-year-old speed ratings are best not to get too caught up in them, I find sometimes.
There you go. They improve, and that's also true of the winter with the three-year-olds. They make quantum leaps forward, and trying to anticipate it makes all the difference. Well, let's look ahead. What do you got that has caught your interest? A big weekend, obviously, in New York, a couple of other spots around, and you're always perusing the PPs.
I am, and I'll just say, I mean, in these four states at Aqueduct, I mean, with the Lavin, Marley's Freedom, Maximus Mischief, and Mendelssohn. I mean, all four horses appear to have, like, arguably, like, a class or a speed edge on their rivals. And they all, I wouldn't be surprised to see any of them run well, but there's some, I'll just point out a horse in each race that to consider for your exotics or multi-race bets. I'll start in the Demoiselle. I thought Enliven, one thing I'll say about her first three races was she broke outside in all three of those races, never had a straw in her path, was out there. I didn't like how she didn't respond last time in the stretch. Now she's going to the rail. And, you know, she might be able to grind this out. Her experience could pay off, and it's not the strongest field. But to me, she's vulnerable. I took a look at this filly. There's just not much pace in this Demoiselle Steve. And Philly Joel, you know, it's easy to like that 6.25 win last time. But in all three of her starts, she just hasn't gotten away. I mean, she got away poorly in the first two. And even in that last time, it was a real moderate pace. Moscano was hustling her from the gate. To me, Jennifer's Dream is sneaky in this race because she has broken sharply in both races. In both those starts at Laurel Park, Vargas essentially just eased her back. He could have easily gone to the lead or been dueling on the lead, in my opinion. And the first time she got there in time, that last time she rolled off that turn to a huge lead in upper stretch and perhaps got a little complacent. And the filly that beat her, No Mo Lady, is a nice Uncle Mo filly for Michael Trombetta. So I thought that was a really solid effort. She was clear of third, and this Medaglia d'Oro filly out of a, you know, joyful victory, you know, a really good race mare by Tappet. To me, the added ground is right in her wheelhouse. She could be lone speed in here and get a dream trip, and I mean, I like her chances a little bit here for Service, John Service.
And obviously Service with the big chance, between his sort
brother
of jaywalk, yeah. That's a good angle on this. I'm surprised. What about you're not no affection for Multibella?
Multibella, I did like that race in the Rags to Riches. I mean, Mother was just, I mean, she had a huge chance to run her down there. That run line in the PPs, it just that didn't look right to me. I mean, fifth by 2.5, fifth by 3, fourth by 2. I mean, she's like 5-plus lengths off the pace in that race, rounding the far turn. I thought it was a really good finish. I'm just worried about the pace and the way the race is going to set up. But if they come back to her, yeah, she's going to have a chance from off the pace tomorrow.
All right, press on.
In the Gopher Juan, you know, Marley's Freedom, I'd have a lot more confidence playing against her if it wasn't Bapper. Well, she had a tough trip last time. I mean, you can make the case she's potentially a little over the top after four big performances and has to start from the rail, which is no, you know, it's a detriment potentially. I like Benita Bianca. I think the key with her is that these connections have realized that this Kerwin filly is just better at one turn, you know, a mile or less distances. And she's won her last two races on the main track. Comes off a big effort last time where, you know, she really fit, you know, just found her groove and finished full of run to get big late pace numbers and the top last out for a speed rating, 99. So she's going to get some pace to run at in here, and she's got a chance there. I'll turn real quick to the Remsen, and I'll just say this about Maximus Mischief, Steve. That race last time was just, I mean, it wasn't even really a race. I mean, he broke out at the start, was like running down the middle of the backstretch. I mean, those horses just weren't even in there. And one thing, though, about him is he's obviously a raw talent. And I think what makes him appealing is that he is such a big, you know, handsome, strong. I mean, he's got a physicality to him, Maximus Mischief does, that's impressive when you watch him on the track. But I still don't think he ran against anything. I still think, hey, he's, you know, never had to deal with other speed in there. And, you know, and Network Effect, I liked that race last time. You know, that Vekoma who beat him, he's another candy rod. It was a solid effort, but I'm a little worried about the stretch out to 9 furlongs with Network Effect. And I landed on Bourbon War. And I'll just say, watching that maiden race last time, the proverbial green as grass applies to Bourbon War. I mean, he was throwing his head around, you know, didn't change leads properly and when he went in the stretch. And basically, to me, he ran about an eighth of a mile, 2/16 of a mile. He finally lengthened his stride in deep stretch and went going away under wire. And, you know, he might not be, still might not be there mentally good enough to win a race like this tomorrow, but I like the 7-day turnaround. I don't think that race took anything out of him. I don't think Henning would be running him back quickly if it did, and I just think he has a huge potential to move forward tomorrow.
I just discussed the Bourbon War as the other interesting horse with Dave Grenick, and he also brought up Gargan and Tax and some rumblings in New York about Tax's potential in here to impact. But I said the same thing about Bourbon War, and certainly, you know, being out of my Conquistadori, precocious routing, an Alcibiades winner. So there's there's something there. I don't blame you. And I think the 5-1 at the will absolutely hold, especially if Tax and Jungle Warrior take any money.
Yeah, definitely. And that's that. I mean, to me, like with Tax, I mean, I'm hoping he'll be out there putting pressure on, or at least trying. I mean, the great fear is Maximum Mischief. It's just three lengths clear. It just has everything in its own way. But if he can get some pressure, it'll be the first time he's actually really been in a real race. So, just to conclude with the Aqueduct card, the Cigar Mile. Mendelsohn, I really liked his effort in the Breeders' Cup Classic, but he is coming back 4 weeks later, you know, a hard race there. And I just think the race could set up well for Sonny Rich. The key with him to me was, if you look back at that state dinner, Steve, he broke from the rail post that day at Belmont Park. He got that inside trip and then just exploded for home, finished full run. His last two races, he's just been way wide. I mean, he was in post 12 in that Woodward and, made a decent, move in there and just got a little tired. But even last time, I thought that wasn't the best trip he could have had. And I just think he's going to sit right behind Mendelsohn on the other speed, saving all the ground, and have some finish in the stretch.
I had that exact same rationale. You and I are on the same page. I said that to Grenig, and certainly Sonny Ridge has got races in his BPs. In fact, he's actually got a very healthy pattern that bodes well for tomorrow. I agree. And certainly Arad Ortiz does a terrific job. If he sees that pace is heating up, and it has plenty of potential to heat up, he'll just bide his time inside and save ground. And certainly inside's been a good place to be at Aqueduct this week. And I was watching Wednesday and yesterday, and you gotta stay fairly close. But I would trust Arad in this spot, and I think you're going to get every bit of 9-2.
Yeah. I'll take a quick look at the Hollywood Derby real quick. I mean, Raging Bull is the horse to beat in that 14 horse field for Chad Brown. I'll have him, but the horse that I'll take a little flyer on is his stable mate, Silver Guard. And the reason a little bit that I like in Silver Guard is that, he didn't show anything playing off that layoff from post two in that Pennsylvania Derby. But Chad Brown has come back and worked him 8 times in the last 10 weeks since then. And to me, he's run his best races the second race after like at least a brief freshening. I mean, he broke his maiden, came back in the Los Al, and I thought coming back a month later really took a step forward. I mean, ran a huge race in the LeCompte. We saw the same thing. He was freshened after that Risen Star and came back in a standing in a Derby, and the Kentucky Derby was his second start back. And I can look at his like late pace numbers, and they get all these triple digit numbers, high 90 numbers. And I just wonder a little bit with Instilled Regard if the dynamics of the dirt racing were to his favor. I think he's eligible to just roll into the turf. I mean, when I think of Arch, the first horse I think of is Blame, but he's just a really terrific turf sire as well. He's got a bunch of champions on the grass. He's got a handful of Grade One winners, and this female family. And Hanson is a half sister to Good Reward, a multiple Grade One winning turf horse who won the Hollywood Derby. So if this Instilled Regard takes to this turf, I don't think it's the most imposing group of 3-year-olds, and I think he's like real smoky with Laurent Giroux at a decent price, hopefully.
I looked at him and I said to myself, ask yourself, it was one of the old handicapping maxims. When you look at a field, you look at the horse and say to yourself, what is he doing here? And it certainly didn't send him to this, just on a lark. And you do see that in that workout pattern includes some trials on the grass that, Chad. And at the same time, you think this is the last, other than like the Malibu, this is, running out of grade one opportunities for three-year-olds. Why not take it the shot here? And the Arch pedigree folds in. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to take this shot. So you're certainly going to get a price for those that, you know, have been looking to do something with Instilled Regard. This might be your chance. I don't blame you for looking in that direction.
In Sunday's Matriarch, that's another good betting race out there at Del Mar. Hopefully the weather cooperates. But I liked Mission Impossible's first race here. I went back and watched that. She really looked like she might run right. You know, she really put a scare into Rushing Fall, I think, in that Queen Elizabeth. That was a real strong effort. Like Rudolph Brissett. He's an up-and-coming, like, trainer. His opportunity to get a grade one victory here. You know, obviously got to deal with those Ted Brown horses in there. But there's a three-year-old filly I think has a chance to step up against her elders on Sunday at Del Mar.
Yeah, ran a terrific race in the Queen Elizabeth, absolutely. It's a fun race. I have not given Sunday a hard look yet. Well, James,
and I know you mentioned the fairgrounds, that Richie Scherer Memorial.
Yes,
just perfect example why the fairgrounds, if you're paying attention to it, they have all these full fields, all these races with eight or more horses. They got a full field of 14. I was there on Louisiana Derby week when that Brielle's Appeal ran steam. You know, something happened after she won that Keeneland allowance, but with those two races under her belt, I think, you know, she's going to be set for a big effort for Al Stahl Jr. and Sean Bridgemahan, and you know that outside post won't hurt her with her speed that she possesses.
Excellent. All right. Well, there's lots to choose from this weekend. There's good racing pretty much everywhere. The Claiming Crown, of course, as well, down at Gulfstream. We talked about that yesterday with Jason Blewett. We're going to touch base with Mike Welsh as well. James, good luck this weekend, and we'll talk next week.
All right, same to you, Steve. Always a pleasure. Thanks.
James Scully, everybody. James underscore Scully 111 on Twitter, and whether it's James's blog entries at Twin Spires or any of his other analysis and thoughts, always an important opinion contribution on the weekend preview. We're 2 hours in. We got lots to do yet in hour three. Stay with us. Hammer, Ed DeRosa, Nick Tamaro, Mike Welch. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hias, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hias.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sarmon Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always try just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.